Okay, so hey everybody, welcome to the Politics with a High School Junior podcast. My name is Aiden Channon, and today we are going to get really controversial, so strap in and get ready. I'm going to start off though first with a huge disclaimer, okay, and we're going to see another one later on. I just want to preface this by saying this is all personal opinion, my opinion to be exact, and I want to make it clear that not everyone is going to agree with me. But I think that it's super important to recognize my background and where I come from on this topic so that you all can understand why this topic is so intriguing to me and hopefully be able to spark a conversation with myself or anyone else in your community about topics that are traditionally taboo and hard to tackle. So, without further ado, let's go ahead and get into it. I'm going to be honest, this topic, like I said, is extremely controversial, but it's something that I find so interesting, so here we are. I really, really became socially aware of politics within the past 18 months or so, pretty much ever since the school shooting in Parkland, and it sort of opened my eyes to the government in America and the fact that, to me, they just weren't doing their jobs properly or as well as they should be to be in those positions of power. So like I said, controversial. However, that event in and of itself would be another podcast entirely. What I am here to talk about today is how political ideologies define the cultures within communities. But what does that mean? You know, it's kind of different to everybody. But essentially, I'm going to break down the things that I believe define a community and how we can use technology to break us out of the shell that we've become accustomed to within them. And then finally, help you understand why all of that is relevant at all. So let's start with the basics, right? What is a community? Well, it's a group of people brought together by similar cultures, similar ethnic backgrounds, similar religions, and often similar pay grades, especially similar political beliefs. But the question is, why? You know, the easy answer is that people want to be surrounded with those who think like themselves. A tweet from @PewResearch says, quote, "People on the right and left are more likely to say it is important to them to live in a place where most people share their political views," end quote. So it's really easy to get along with people who are there to affirm the beliefs that you have and have had growing up when you live in a place where everyone is really like-minded. Unfortunately, that's not how the world really works, you know? People work, they watch the news, they go to school, they're aware of what other political parties are saying, but they're ignoring it entirely because as soon as the TV switches off, or they check out of work for the day, or they exit school, or they're not at practice, whatever the case may be, it's like this huge, you know, internal metaphorical exhale, right? They're no longer being challenged with the views of those who don't agree with them. They've gone home, they're comfortable. And that is half the problem that America's having today. You know, no one wants to be challenged and to have that conversation about difficult topics, but it's time that we do. The world is changing, we must change with it. And there really is no other way to look at it. So now that we've got a basic understanding of culture, we need to get to the basics of the two-party system. The major parties, as we all know, are Democrats and Republicans. This is a great place to start, but you know, why are they significant, right? Why does it matter that we've got the Democrats and Republicans? Why not the pink and the purple party, you know? So a little bit of background, just a little fun fact, because I'm a history buff. When America was first becoming a country and the founding fathers kind of sat down over tea and had to figure it all out, there was really only one party. However, after being in APUSH this year and listening to the Hamilton soundtrack more times than I can count, I have learned that with the help of Thomas Jefferson, Alexander Hamilton and his followers would not have been pushed to their limits to create the two-party system that we have today. And the two-party system is huge. It allows people from all different kinds of backgrounds to come together with varying political views. This is majorly important, especially in a democracy. So back then, though, the Federalist Party was actually much more similar to that of the Republican Party of today. And I know you must be thinking, you know, what about Jefferson? If not for the side of the powerful government, you know, where did he lie, especially as someone who later became president? The answer is the Democratic Republicans. So this name can actually tend to make people do a bit of a double take when they look at it because each party is entirely the extreme opposite of the other. So what are they doing in a hyphenated statement, right? Well, let's Google and find out. So I took to Google and pretty much just searched federalism definition as well as Democratic-Republican definition, but according to vocabulary.com, federalism is a system of government in which entities such as states or provinces share power with a national government. The United States government functions according to these principles of federalism. The basic principles of federalism are these, though. So the government has the ultimate power, similar to that of a monarchy. This is what Hamilton wanted. This was his big thing. He thought it would be the best for this new sort of baby country that was being raised. However, the slave owners of the South, like Thomas Jefferson, were unhappy with this because after the Revolutionary War, the government paid back their debts, the debts of those in the South, and they believed that the Federalists were only doing this to get an upper hand on future votes and any other sort of elections that would be happening. This conflict escalated and the two-party system was born, giving all white adult males the power to speak their truth and vote for what they believed in. At the time, the lower working class were farmers who did not want their land to be in custody of the government and thus voted Democratic Republican. The wealthy educated class wanted to keep their wealth and education to themselves, and most importantly, the power where they deemed it best fit, in the hands of a powerful government. So I hope you can see where these cultural lines were beginning to be drawn, and since then, these divides have become less of a line in the sand and more of a wall. No pun intended. Thus, political extremism was born. And I'm going to take a brief intermission right now and just say, this is my second disclaimer that I mentioned earlier. And I just want to say that the deeper we get into this, the more I need to emphasize the fact that my goal is not to offend anyone. This is my view on the subject at hand, and therefore extremely, extremely biased, if you couldn't tell by what I had said before. I am aware of the fact that I may not be fully educated on some of the topics that I'm speaking about, so if you would like to respond cordially and politely, please feel free and let me know where I can find, you know, the most unbiased materials to further my knowledge, because my goal in the end is not only to educate others on the importance of breaking cultural and community barriers, but also educating myself. So back to the topic at hand, political extremism. Here we go. It's exactly what it sounds like. Groups of people who are either on the far left or the far right of the political spectrum and who often cannot be swayed from their political standing. There's a quote from the Cambridge Review of International Affairs in an article called The Psychology of Political Extremism that states, quote, "It was as if the individual personality had been replaced by endlessly replicated collective versions of what an individual should be, according to the ideal external socio-political criteria," end quote. In short, people lean towards the political views that surround them, i.e. their communities and their societies and what they think society wants them to believe, right? For example, we are delving into religion now, so it's going to get a little touchy. The church teaches that abortion is wrong. This is a belief shared among most, if not all, Christians. I can't make that generalization because I don't know if it truly is all, but it is shared among most Christians. However, there is a small group of Christians, those who plant the, they would be those who, you know, plant themselves outside of Planned Parenthood in an attempt to scare the women who go in to receive procedures. And that kind of hostility is not what Christian parishes and the Catholic Church teaches. It teaches love and that God is love. And that group, while claiming to be part of the church, does not uphold all of the ideals that the church has because they're being so hostile. And this is the same for the anarchists of the far left and the ultra-conservatives of the far right. And they've all taken the views of their respective groups and skewed them to be entirely one way or the other. And it's not going to last much longer. The country is going to come to this breaking point that we're never going to be able to come back from. So it's important that we stop it while we can. Even though these groups tend to be what are thought about when the subject of left or right comes up, there are still people in the middle working to create a society that is better for all of America. I'm proud to say that this group is made up of a majority of teenagers. They have seen what separation in politics can do to a country, especially after shootings like Parkland and, you know, events in the black community where people are being torn apart by police brutality and the fact that it's not being handled as well as they believe it should be. So what they're doing is working to use social media in a way that can break those barriers. So in an article by Saba Hamedi on CNN, she explains that since the Parkland shooting, the new generation is aware of their power and the ability to speak their minds. You know, they're doing it, whether it's by tweeting their responses to political debates, much like President Trump does when anything worthy of note happens in the White House. They're using Instagram to plan to come together and inspire others their age to plan and participate in walkouts and go to more political events and become more socially aware. They're also, most importantly, inspiring teenagers their age who are in low-income areas to have the courage and the faith in themselves that they need to speak out against things like police brutality and the unfair treatment of those who are underprivileged. So it's truly a beautiful thing that's happening out of tragedy. And I like that we aren't just sitting back anymore, you know? We really are taking a stand. We're not just letting it fall out of our grasp, because it really is all there. If we work hard enough as a community and as a country, we can come together and overcome these issues easily. So I hope I've given you some food for thought as you go throughout the rest of your day. Remember, the conversation to get the ball rolling is the most important part. And as stated in a TED Talk by Theo E.J. Wilson, quote, "You have to let go of that fear and embrace your curiosity," end quote. And it's true. So whether it be talking to someone who you might share political beliefs with to understand how they got there, or to talk to someone in an older generation who is on a completely different side of the spectrum than you, it can be great to just understand. And that's what we really need to get to. The whole goal is to understand one another. So direct message someone on Instagram politely. Start the conversation. After a while, it may be able to bring the world one step closer together. Thanks for listening. Aiden.